What happened was unthinkable. Work as we know it powered down. But e-tail is here to keep business on. On to turn your home office into a powerhouse. On to plan your epic power lunch. On to keep your virtual team connected. On to make you unstoppable. This is the one thing e-tail business can do for you, and that's connecting you to work every day. E-tail is on for business.
Want more from your bank? Open a Cajun Pride checking account at State Bank and Trust Company and enjoy the benefits. Unlimited check writing, overdraft protection, online banking, mobile banking, debit card, ID theft assistance, safe deposit box discounts, prescription drug discounts, shopping, travel, entertainment discounts, and much more. Call or come in for more information about applicable fees and terms. State Bank and Trust Company. Cajun banking, served just the way you like it. State Bank and Trust Company, member FDIC.
It's so on. The SiriusXM Listen Free event is happening now. Just press the SAT button in your car to hear over 100 channels, including ad-free music of every kind, plus sports play-by-play and talking news for everyone. Enjoy even more free when you download the SXM app. Hear expertly curated podcasts, ad-free extra channels of music for any mood, SiriusXM video, and the ability to create your own Pandora music stations. Don't miss out. Listen free now.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply.
You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM. KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, George.
Welcome back to the Hudak Takeover. You're listening to the Sports Hangover on the Pelicans flagship, ESPN New Orleans. This is Maddie Hudak. You hear me sometimes on Tuesdays, but today I'm taking over the show. You can find me over on Twitter at MaddieHudak_94. So we're into our second hour here. And to recap, we spoke with Locked On Pelicans' Jake Madison at NolaJake on Twitter. And like I said, the Chanel to my Walmart sports attorney Dan Lust on Twitter at SportsLawLust. In this hour, we'll be talking with Mr. Vegas in a little bit, Rafael Esparza. Sorry, Esparza. We're doing great today. We're going to talk some LSU baseball odds, NBA playoff odds, and a few other things. And then I'm going to have my good friend on, Ross Jackson, for a Paulson and a Debo party. In the meantime, just to kind of go back to some of the things we talked about in the first hour, Jake brought up, you know, the point about Damian Lillard and really just kind of pulling this team, kicking and screaming through this first series to only, you know, fall and really all be for naught. And like you said, they get there every year. But at what point, you know, do you go and try to win a championship elsewhere? And I've always, you know, kind of seen it's interesting because, you know, there you see that happen to players like Lillard. And it's, you know, everyone's saying, I don't understand how he hasn't tried to go somewhere else. But then you think of, you know, Kevin Durant coming to the Warriors and then trying to win a championship a few years back. And then a lot of people kind of look at that as, you know, really picking your, you know, superstar team where, you know, LeBron James kind of did it first down in Miami with the Heat when, you know, Wade and everyone kind of joined him down there. And they really just built this super team. And then we started to see that more, kind of these players taking more control of their own legacy. But there always is kind of a blowback, and I don't know if it's dependent on that player itself, on the destination they go to. At least in the case of Durant, you know, it really seemed that a lot of people looked at Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, and it just being such an obvious, oh, yeah, well, go, you know, go join the A-plus team and win a championship, and then that didn't really work out. But then you see, on the other hand, something like, you know, Lillard, where he's kind of just wasting his career. And in the NFL, it's starting to kind of permeate over there where we're kind of starting to see, especially, you know, quarterbacks, and it really only can be, you know, the quarterbacks taking control of their own legacy. You know, Matt Stafford, kind of like Damian Lillard, will accept less playoff appearances. But, you know, wanting to make it to that next step and realizing that the team you're on just can't get you there. I mean, I don't blame him for wanting to actually have a shot at winning a championship. And it's easier said than done to me when you're looking kind of on the outside looking in. But none of these cases are really viewed through the same lens. Russell Wilson, that, you know, seems legitimately like that happened 2 years ago. But if you guys recall, I believe back in March, where his agent came out and said, you know, the classic, well, I'm not interested in a trade, but if I am, here are the convenient four teams that I'll name on air that, you know, should kind of inquire about me. And there was a lot of blowback on, you know, should Russell Wilson be demanding a trade? You know, he asked for so much money in his contract, and now, you know, he's asking the team to have to deal with that and wanting kind of control over the hiring decisions. And it starts to kind of snowball. And I don't think every team situation is the same. You know, with the Houston Texans, not to touch, you know, the Deshaun Watson thing, it's just, you know, it's Friday. Let's just keep it a little bit more positive here. But, you know, there was some question there about a team and a quarterback and, you know, the front office, their hiring decisions. Should a player have a decision-making process in that? And then when it kind of came out that, you know, the Seahawks had hired a coordinator that Russell Wilson, you know, they just weren't really, or I think they tried to appease him by hiring a coordinator that he liked. But for me, you know, what I point out was when he tried to offer, you know, a couple plays up to the Seahawks when things weren't going well, and then them kind of just pushing him out of the room. You know, he's won a Super Bowl before. He's been with that organization for a decade now. I don't think it's unreasonable for him to want to have a say in the playbook. And, you know, he was kind of on this MVP campaign, and then it faltered. I'm a big sports psychology girl. You guys know I bring that up all the time. But there is some psyche to be said about, you know, kind of getting shut out of that process by your team and how that affects your play. Then there's also players like Aaron Rodgers, who in the face of adversity, they go win an MVP. And he's kind of getting that similar blowback of, you know, well, Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have a say in the GM decisions of the organization. And that's fine. But then you're going to lose Aaron Rodgers. And would you blame him? I wouldn't. And I'm not even, you know, the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan. He kind of, you know, goes on these MVP campaigns, and the Jeopardy thing was very keen timing with that. And I don't know, sometimes it seems a little calculated to me. But I mean, they're kind of doing, you know, what he did to Brett Favre, except minus, you know, the fact that there is now an added trade up. And then he went and won an MVP and kind of crickets. So I've just thought this kind of, you know, permeation of this NBA thing where players are trying to kind of take control of their own destiny, just very interesting how it's viewed in football. To me, you know, the quarterback, the team rises with the quarterback, the team falls with the quarterback. We're the face of the franchise. We criticize these million-dollar contracts as hindrances to getting traded and, you know, why. And, you know, in the case of Watson before, you know, everything else, one of the things was, well, you know, he asked for this contract extension and now he wants to get out. I mean, sure, that you could get a new contract, you could get a raise in your workplace, but if your workplace becomes untetherable or toxic, or they hire, you know, a religious person to oversee football operations, are you, it's not the same terms under which that person signed that contract. To kind of go, you know, back to the sports law we were talking about earlier, I view it in the case of how you would, you know, view any place of employment. And that employee might have to quit, sure, but I mean, just, you know, to say that they signed this extension and then the circumstances massively changed thereafter, it's just, you know, easier said than done. And why shouldn't players ask to be, you know, paid a lot? Like, you know, there's the side of Tom Brady and Drew Brees where they've largely taken these team-friendly deals. And you can see the difference that that makes. But, I mean, when there's precedent, I don't blame these guys for asking for big contracts, but I also don't blame them if the circumstances change, you know, within those 2 years to where they might want to seek out, you know, trades elsewhere. It's an interesting balance. And I look, kind of seems like I'm, you know, more on the side of the players than a lot of people seem to be. And to go back to the Aaron Rodgers thing, do I think that players should have a say in personnel decisions? I don't know. But I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the two of them can't coexist on the team. So it's not so much Aaron Rodgers, you know, calling for the head of the GM as much as it is basically, you know, saying this is a deal breaker here. So it's the quarterback or the GM. You guys decide. And we'll see there. But, you know, now that puts Jordan Love in one position, to say the least, where if he doesn't come out and have, you know, his own mini MVP campaign, they've really set him up for failure there. So there's management to be involved in. And Rogers brought this up where, you know, he said there's no management in business, but there's people involved. But the management of people is just as important as, you know, the humanitarian side of being a people person. Like, people have emotions. People have feelings. As much as you'd like to ignore them, you know, I used to work in jury consulting, and we would ask this question to jurors. When you make your most important decisions, do you lead with your head or your heart? You'll see a lot of self-bias on that question where it was very lopsided towards head. But then when you ask them a lot of questions about medical malpractice, things like that, where, you know, it's clearly a logical viewpoint, you can kind of see where people are. You know, I say that I'm more of a logical thinker, but really, you know, I do lead with my emotions. And, you know, when it gets to the damages and you hear all their stories, that quickly changes. So I think we'd all like to think we're a little more logical than we are, and we can separate feelings from the workplace. But for football players, you know, this is their life, and it's a job that it, you know, I mean, if you're Drew Brees, you're there for 14 hours a day, but, you know, it's just, that's your entire life. And if you're in a bad work environment, I really don't blame them. I always will go back to Sean Payton. Drew Brees, when he just joined the team, he walked into a meeting room, and Sean Payton had pulled up the film from the Chargers and looked at Drew, and he was like, "You're my quarterback. I'm going to create plays that you are good at and tailor this towards your strengths," because everything starts and falls with the quarterback. This is a passing league now. As I was talking about in that earlier segment, you know, kind of how the NBA, what's the value of defense there? It's really the same thing in the NFL, except tenfold, because now you have these, you know, not just hyper athletic quarterbacks, but ones who also have a baseball arm like Patrick Mahomes and just can completely, you know, change what offenses look like. But I mean, the Saints themselves, you know, if you put Taysom Hill and Drew Brees under the same playbook, all issues about all of them aside, you know, that's not tailoring it to either of their strengths at all. And so, you know, I just think there's something to be said about valuing your quarterback, the guy who is the decision maker. And then that's a guy that, you know, when you put out there in the 2-minute offense, there's trust there. If, you know, the Saints, if Drew Brees had gone out there and where the Packers run fourth down and kicked a field goal and lost to the Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game, if Drew went up to Sean and said, you know, I have this play, more confident that Sean Payton would be willing to run it and listen to it than it seems like it was the case, you know, with the Packers, to the point where Aaron Rodgers even made a joke about it on Jeopardy. Well, I guess, you know, some other contestant made the joke for him. It's kind of easy fodder. But, you know, you see Drew just lead that team in that 2-minute surgical drill that I'm going to miss so dearly. And, you know, his quarterback leaps, and just, you know, when you instill that confidence in your quarterback, that confidence perpetuates through their play. I keep going back to the sports psychology thing. Like, you know, the last thing you want to do is give these players a complex, kind of like what we saw with Russell Wilson. And in my opinion, kind of this reversion back into a shell of himself. Everyone was, you know, oh, well, you know, he was criticizing the offensive line, but he was holding onto the ball for a very long time. Well, was he holding onto the ball for a really long time at the beginning of the season? Or was that something that there was a marked change? And what, you know, what happened then? Because if he is holding on to the ball for too long, it's not as if he suddenly forgot how to play football, but it's, you know, this, I think that this sense of control over, like, you know, your legacy, but just the game itself. I think, you know, if you guys played sports, you've been on teams where you feel like it's something where you can provide input back to your coach. And then there's situations where you kind of just put down and play. And a lot of that depends on the caliber of the coach. You know, if it's Bill Belichick, I'm much more willing to, you know, put my head down and play than perhaps Matt Patricia. But I don't know, the symbiotic relationship really seems to be paramount. And look at the case of the San Francisco 49ers. And you have to give credit to Jimmy Garoppolo there, you know, kind of first and foremost for really handling this like a champion. And I'm not discounting the fact that, you know, he knows the way he's being really smart about this, in my opinion. He's not making any type of stink about it, and that looks good to any potential trade partners. I'm not willing to rule out New England yet, although, you know, Mac Jones, McCorkle, we'll see there. But a lot of that, again, comes back to the coach and the quarterback and that relationship and letting him in on these things. You know, it's not like they blindsided Garoppolo and on the day of the draft day traded up 3 spots and selected Trey Lance. You know, they seem to be involved in that process from the beginning, and it's looking like, you know, he's probably going to be the starter, just kind of with Trey Lance's developmental trajectory. But it just seems like the communication was there. When the Saints almost drafted Patrick Mahomes, I believe like Drew Brees came home early from a fishing trip or something, and Sean looked at him and said, you know, if Patrick's available, we're taking him. And even if he was taken aback in that moment, at least he didn't have to hear that on the radio. He didn't have to hear that secondhand. He didn't have to hear it at all. But I just, there really is something important to be said about that communication. And that, yeah. So that's kind of my rant. Started from the Julio Jones thing, started from Damian Lillard. But if you guys want to call in, I really am curious, you know, what you guys think. Should the NBA model be the NFL model? You know, should Damian Lillard go to a different team? And then, you know, what's different than that than, you know, the Kevin Durant decision? You know, what are those kind of prime difference makers that make those decisions be looked at through a more critical lens versus, you know, really advocating for Lillard to kind of get out of Dodge? Similar to Matt Stafford, no one really looked twice at Stafford and they said, I don't blame you. You know, look at Calvin Johnson in Detroit. Great receiver, but, you know, what was there to show about it? And that's kind of where we're seeing Julio Jones come out of the woodworks, except, you know, a little beat up and a little agey at this point. But I get where these players are coming from. I'm sure we've all been on teams where it's just been non-competitive and it's not much fun. So I don't know, but all of that is to say, you know, players are the people kind of thing. That was my philosophical rant. I'm not really sure where it went, but I'm curious for your guys' thoughts on any of all of the above. So again, this is the Sports Hangover on the Pelicans flagship. Up next, we have Rafael Esperanza joining us to talk Vegas odds.
Teaming up to create a healthier community, Coastal Broadcasting and Thibodeau Regional Medical Center present Health Watch.
Just as you put fuel in your car to drive from point A to point B, you need to put fuel in the form of food in your body to achieve peak performance. Good nutrition leads to increased recovery, high concentration, high confidence, and ultimately high performance.
The first tip to good sports nutrition is increasing the number of times you eat per day. An example of a well-balanced day would include breakfast, a mid-morning snack, lunch, pre-practice snack, recovery snack, dinner, and an optional nighttime snack. This is helpful because the athlete may experience an increase in stabilized metabolism, maintain level blood sugars, receive constant energy and nutrients to muscles, prevent late night overeating, and ensure adequate calories throughout the day.
Breakfast is your kickstart for the day to maintain focus, return blood sugars to normal, and be your best as early as possible. Some good breakfast foods may be a smoothie, peanut butter and jelly sandwich, apple slices with peanut butter, waffle with fresh fruit, egg and turkey sausage, or yogurt. Lunch sustains metabolism, stabilizes blood sugar, and assists in meeting caloric goals. Some good lunch options may be peanut butter sandwich, turkey club sandwich, grilled chicken salad, ham and cheese wrap, or grilled tuna with vegetables. Snacks fuel your body, provide energy before workout, keeps you focused all day, maintains stable blood sugar, and keeps you from overeating at any given meal. Some good snacks may be roasted nuts, cracker and pretzel mix, bananas, peanut butter, or yogurt with fresh fruit.
Snacks play an important role in recovering nutrition, which means the body needs to refuel energy stores with carbohydrates, repair and rebuild muscle tissue with proteins, and rehydrate with water and electrolytes.
Timing is everything when it comes to your recovery snack, so be sure to refuel your body within 30 to 60 minutes post-workout, practice, or game.
If you have questions about nutrition before activity, snacks play an important role in recovering nutrition, which means the body needs to refuel energy stores with carbohydrates, repair and rebuild muscle tissue with proteins, and rehydrate with water and electrolytes. Please call the Sports Medicine Center of Thibodeau Regional at 985-493-4502 or visit us at Thibodeau.com. 985-493-4502 or visit us at Thibodeau.com.
Health Watch is a presentation of Coastal Broadcasting and Thibodeau Regional Medical Center. For more information on the Sports Medicine Center of Thibodeau Regional, call 985-493-4502 or visit Thibodeau.com. Call 985-493-4502 or visit Thibodeau.com.
I rescued Toast from a shelter in 2011. I love Toast because she's a lazy diva. She's sleeping right now. She's so loving. She's so comforting. When I walked into the shelter, I knew right then that she was special.
Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
How can we be excited about a show where we just talk?
Talk sports.
That's how they talk in the Major League.
Now back to The Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Hello, y'all. I don't know why I just went Australian. It's the Hudak Takeover on The Sports Hangover on the Pelicans flagship, ESPN New Orleans. Again, this is Maddie Hudak over on Twitter at MaddieHudak_94. And I have Mr. Vegas on the line now, Rafael Esparza. You can find him on Twitter at VSI Doc Sports. DOC Sports, fair enough. And he is our Vegas sports gambling analyst. How are you doing today, Rafael?
I am doing well. I love this Australian accent. That was that was key. I've been there, and I feel like surfing right now.
Well, I haven't, but I'm glad that that stuck. Can't say that you should go surfing here, but glad that, you know, we're giving off that vibe. So I'm sure, you know, the vibe. Do you live in Las Vegas?
I do. Once upon a time, before pandemic, yes, I was full time in Las Vegas. But I was here in the Crescent City when the world took a big dump on us, and I have not been back yet. Soon, I'm hoping to be soon.
Ah, so again, Rafael Esparza at VSI Doc Sports. What goes into being a sports gambling analyst? Are you analyzing the odds? Are you analyzing, you know, the actual numbers, or what factors go into that?
Well, being a professional odds maker, as I call it, it's just almost like a stockbroker. You're just looking at numbers all day long. People think I'm looking at players and stats all day long. It's mostly about how you're going to get two-way action coming in through the betting window or the betting screen, as more people do it online and through their phone. So it's just analyzing trends and what people's habits are, the favorites. We figured last night, for a perfect example, we figured the Lakers' money would come in late just because they were at home, which I bet you the people who did bet the Laker game is probably kicking themselves right now for why they did that. But it's all about just following betting trends and following what the betting public is going to do.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I mean, I have a stats background. I'm kind of nerdy, and I love to analyze trends. And like you said, it's not so much the players or the numbers, but just like looking at kind of patterns and how you can predict things. So a couple of things that, you know, that you have in the wheelhouse right now, starting off, I believe, with the LSU baseball, it's the 2021 College World Series odds.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's the 9 o'clock game, so it's only battling one NBA playoff. I'll have that game on my screen, but also the Vegas Golden Knights game is also going on tonight at the same time. But I'm very intrigued on this game, even though everyone thinks I always bash LSU sports on the air during you guys' time. But it's going to be a very interesting game. It's pretty much a pick 'em game between Gonzaga. I was hoping this would be a college basketball game instead of a baseball game, because I think this would be a really good game for basketball. But for great two starting pitchers. And I'm a little bit shocked that the total came out at 9 and quickly got bet all the way down to 8.5. I think it's going to be a pitching duel. Would not be shocked if we see a lot of runs. I think the first game between Oregon and Central Connecticut will probably have a lot of runs on that game. But this one, LSU-Gonzaga, can't wait to watch. I think it's going to be a great, great pitching battle.
And when you say it started at 9 and it goes down to 8.5, are those the odds on the winner of the game, on the spread, or what kind of breaking down those numbers?
That was total runs scored in a game. So, which was kind of high. Like I said, both their aces are going. Mm-hmm. Both their teams have been well rested. So you figure the bullpen and other starters will probably come into the game to try to advance. Again, I have this ranked as a lot of games going today. Probably one of the best pitching matchups of all college baseball today.
Wow. And that's Gonzaga versus LSU at 9 o'clock p.m.?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know, we were kind of talking earlier about, like, how these games in the bubble and everything, there were, like, these higher scores. I don't know if that's what plays into it, but like you said, when you have two ace pitchers going up, it did drop down, I guess, a little bit, but I don't know. You know, what does that kind of tell you when you're looking at a game and it looks like what the lineup is, that hit scored shouldn't be that high? You know, what kind of factors can affect that?
Well, especially when you're looking at Eugene, Oregon game, especially out in the Northwest, night games, especially in college baseball, and even in college football, sometimes the weather's really thin. The ball won't travel, especially in college baseball. So that's what was another shocking, that they made that total on 9 runs. A 9 o'clock game in the Northwest, Eugene or Oregon. I'm hoping we don't see any kind of rain. It seems like every time I'm in Oregon, it's raining. But I'm hoping it's a nice evening where maybe the ball will travel a little bit, because I will want to see an exciting game. But it should be a fantastic pitching matchup. I think LSU has a chance to steal this game. I would like to see LSU battle Oregon. I think that'd be a fantastic matchup.
Yeah, yeah. And again, Rafael Esparza at VSI Doc Sports. And you bring up a couple of good points there, like you said, Oregon raining. And I'm from the Bay Area, so I'm familiar with that type of climate and the fog that can kind of come out of nowhere. So that can affect visibility. But that's just one thing that's kind of up on your wheelhouse. We were just talking about the NBA playoffs. And what are those odds looking like now after kind of, you know, the shocking, not so much shocking when you think of the injuries and everything and what the Suns were able to put together, but seeing those defending champs and the two finalists knocked out in the first round, you know, how are those odds moving forward? Who's the favorite?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Maybe both LA teams will be on my couch watching the rest of the NBA playoffs, because I think the Clippers can go down. Western Conference final odds is very interesting. It's weird when you look at it. Utah Jazz are the favorite at plus 125. Phoenix Suns 2-1. Clippers 5-1. No respect for the Nuggets, with the Joker probably going to be called MVP probably either today or tomorrow at 9-1. But it's very interesting to see that. But let's face it, I think everyone wants to know what the Brooklyn Nets are going to do. Where they got the big three out there. They're the favorites to win the NBA championship right now at plus 160. We're between Utah and Milwaukee. Boy, did Milwaukee look really good against, I thought, a tough Miami team. But this Milwaukee Bucks team, I have them coming out of the East. I think they beat that big three, and I can't wait to watch game one of that matchup that starts up tomorrow night, where the Brooklyn Nets are a -4 point favorite at home. Total's 239.5, so if you like offense, I think you better watch that game tomorrow.
Whoa, 239.5 for and that's total point score that they're – projecting for?
Yep. Both teams, 239.5. So that's crazy that for a playoff game, which everyone thinks defense in playoffs, yep. Not this year.
I was going to say, have you seen the odds change? Because like I just said, we were talking how the Heat, you know, are in the bubble last year, how the scoring went up. It was happening all over the place in England, all of the soccer matches. Offense scoring was up a lot last year, and same in football, just the scoring averages, lack of fans, and kind of equalizing that. How did that affect, you know, these odds? And do you think that's kind of playing into maybe these inflated, you know, like you said, 239.5 playoff odds in where, you know, defense kind of is on display?
Yeah, I think in every sport besides maybe baseball, you're seeing more runs scored than anything. I think Liverpool and Bayern Munich just probably scored a goal, and they're not even playing right now. So, yeah, I think in every sport besides baseball, defense is still in a pandemic wearing masks. I'm not seeing defense in any sport besides maybe pitching and baseball. But NBA, I mean, the Lakers games, they were just struggling on offense, so you can't really say it was defensive game on that. But Miami Heat, who is a defensive battle team, a tough, maybe 1990s Detroit Piston type team, let the Milwaukee Bucks score average almost 127 points a game in that series. So that's a little shocking. I think we're going to see a lot more offense tonight. I think the Clippers need a defensive game. I think if they can keep Dallas to maybe under 110, I think they can steal that road game.
I was just going to say, you can't just have one or the other, because you could have good defense, but everyone has good offense in the playoffs. So you have to kind of be able to match that. And again, this is Rafael Esparza. Is that correct? Yes. VSI Doc Sports. And just to finish this off, we're going to go over the Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul odds, if you will. Rafael, let's unpack that before we head to the break. What's going on there?
Well, this train wreck should be very interesting. I just want to watch it because Ocho Cinco's boxing is one of the undercard fights on this one. But I really wanted to talk about this because I don't want people to get in their cars and drive all the way to Biloxi or Mississippi to place their bets, and you can't bet this in the United States. So no United States books is carrying this bet. But if you wanted to maybe go someplace online and open up something, Floyd Mayweather is -1,000 against Jake Paul, so it's going to probably, I believe,
could be a train wreck. Is it Jake Paul or Logan Paul?
Logan Paul. Jake Paul is fighting, I think, in August. These Paul, you know, even though it's a joking matter, but these fights are bringing so much money when it comes to pay-per-view and all that. So I guess they're laughing last when they're sitting down in their buckets full of cash, and I'm trying to find who's going to bring me lunch today.
Yeah, no kidding. It's honestly, it's been the oddest thing to me, this, like, Logan, Jake Paul, we are boxers. But Floyd Mayweather is no joke. So interested to see how that unfolds. But like you said, apparently you can't bet on that here. I don't know why. Is that normally the case, or is that have anything to do with the Pauls being involved?
I think it's because when they announced there's going to be no judges, which some of the places that I work for, we still have the fight up. And I think if you see Floyd Mayweather knock out Logan Paul, and they're counting to 100, and he's still laying out, I think we all know who won that fight. So if for some odd reason, if it goes a deep distance, we'll refund everybody.
Exactly. Guys, Rafael Esparza, thanks so much for coming on at BSI Doc Sports. You're listening to the Sports Hangover on the Pelican flagship, ESPN New Orleans. Hudak Takeover. We'll have Ross Jackson on after the break.
Take it easy. Have a great weekend.
With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is like the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Kind of like choosing Charles Barkley in a pickup game.
We'll take Barkley.
Ha! First pick! Sorry, kids!
Yep, even easier than that. And with our top-rated app, you can bank anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision.
Okay, here's the plan. Pass me the ball every time.
This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
New consumer accounts only. Approval required. Terms apply. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
It's time for some straight talk. Sure, saving money feels good. But cutting your wireless bill in half? That feels really good. Like walk-off home run in the ninth inning kind of good. Okay, maybe not that good, but pretty darn good. With Straight Talk, you can get 25 gigs of high-speed data for $45 a month, up to 50% less than the other guys, plus no contract. All on America's best networks. Why pay a whole lot when you can pay half? Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Friends, if you're in a job you can't stand or worried your unemployment benefits will be ending, you need to go to mycomputercareer.edu and fill out the free career evaluation form. I've personally spoken to them, and apparently, employers are lining up to hire their graduates. In as little as 4 months, you could start your career in the growing cybersecurity and networking fields. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Tell them Max sent you.
Millions plan for retirement online, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, and manage your benefits all from the comfort of your home. And give yourself the freedom to do what you want offline. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Got a hot take?
Everybody listen up.
Let's hear it. Call us at 800-998-1003.
Answer that phone.
Or tweet us at ESPN Radio NOLA. Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hip, hip, cheerio. We did Australian last time. Let's just do British, because why not? It's the Hudak Takeover on the Sports Hangover on the Pelicans flagship, ESPN New Orleans. I have my great friend on the line here, Mr. Ross Jackson, on Twitter, at Ross Jackson NOLA. He's everywhere, and for good reason. He's my good friend on the podcast I do with him and Deuce Windham, Hudak Confessional. All things on Locked On, including Locked On Saints. And he's the new co-managing editor of CSC. How you doing today, Ross?
Hey, doing very well. Glad to be here with you. How's it going so far?
It's going. I think I blacked out the first 15 minutes, but we're still here. And it's Pulse and Adebo party time with the number one fan club that I'm invoking right now.
That's right. Time to black out for another 15 minutes, but this time due to party purposes with Paulson and Diva. No, first of all, let me say this has been fantastic, and I'm so excited to be here with you. So thanks for allowing me to come through as a part of your day here.
Yes, thank you. I would never have anything but that. And, you know, I had food on the agenda, but maybe we can tie that into our Adebo talks a little bit as well. But I really wanted to have Ross on. Like I said, I wanted to go kind of segue into the Saints, and he was on Adebo from day one. And really, you know, was high on him. And so I was just so happy for him when, you know, we ended up drafting him. And what did you see about Adebo prior to the draft that made you feel like he'd be a good fit with the Saints?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first couple of things that really stand out when you know, hear, you know, Jeff Duncan did a phenomenal piece over at The Athletic in his conversation with Jeff Ireland, where they talked a little bit about what it is that they look for in the cornerback position. And while they talked about things like instincts and confidence, the one thing that everyone knows that the Saints love when it comes to their prototypical cornerback is size. So you look at Paulson Adebo, 6'1", 197, 198 pounds. He fits the mold exactly to a T with what it is that the New Orleans Saints really like in terms of the physical profile of a starting cornerback in their system and on their team. And then you can also look at, you know, I'm always a bit of a fan of defensive backs that were formerly wide receivers, just like mm-hmm. I'm a fan of defensive linemen that were formerly offensive linemen or vice versa. I like the idea that you can get into your opponent's head. And so when you talk about instincts, confidence, experience breeds both of those things. And so I think that him having that wide receiver experience definitely helps him out from a number of angles when playing the cornerback position.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I did an earlier interview with Clay Mack. He's a very, you know, well-known mm-hmm. defensive back trainer. He's actually trained Marshawn Lattimore. He's worked with CeeDee Deuce and most recently Paulson Adebo. And he's also a former wide receiver that turned into a cornerback. So that, mm-hmm. you know, that parallel there, but like you said, I love that same thing. And you kind of talk about that mentality, and that's really something that Clay Mack pointed out almost immediately. And that's something he sometimes has to teach in players. But with Adebo, it was really, like you said, all of the traits are there, his length, his size. You know, a lot of people during the draft were very high on people like Asante Samuel Jr., and no knock to him, but he's 5'9", if I'm correct, and like 195 pounds. That size versus Adebo, you know, 6'1", 198, really is that prototypal cornerback. And just for some reason, he got lost in the shuffle during this draft process. But like I said, you were really on him from the beginning. You know, talking with Mac, he, you know, mentioned how he kind of refined his technique and everything and how they kind of worked on getting those deflections and turning those into interceptions. So I think Saints fans can, you know, really be excited to look forward to him. But I'm not sure. Have you had a chance to kind of look at any of Adebo's film so far?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, throughout the draft process, I was watching a lot of his tape. And he's got some really impressive games where he really stood out. Like, you can look at the Oregon game that went down to the wire and actually came down to a couple of his pass breakups in the red zone and the end zone that helped to seal that game in overtime for the Stanford Cardinals. And then he also had some games where he struggled, like against UCF, where he struggled quite a bit in that one and got beat deep. I mean, you saw a lot of the confidence that he had in 2018, a la the Oregon game, kind of drop off a little bit in 2019, specifically in that UCF game. And so that's one of those things that you're going to want to see if he can rebuild at this point in his transition to the NFL is going to be that confidence. The Saints believe very highly in confidence at the cornerback position. You can see it amongst the cornerbacks that are on the team. You look at Janoris Jenkins, who was one of the most prepared corners in the NFL. He's such a film study guy, and he brings that knowledge, intellect, and education into the room of the cornerbacks, as well as the secondary, as well as out onto the field. So that's what you're trying to replace now. So you have to find somebody that has the athleticism, that has the skill set. And one of the things that's really specific about Paulson Adebo that I think you alluded to is, you know, turning those deflections, those pass breakups into interceptions. This guy's got phenomenal ball skills. I mean, he had 4 interceptions in 2018, 4 more in 2019, despite only playing 19 games. And over the course of that time, 27 pass breakups in those 2 seasons, which is just a ton of ability for him to be able to affect the ball at the catch point going up against those opposing receivers. So as long as he can weave all of that in and try to maybe, I don't want to say accelerate his development, but if he's able to, let's say, develop at an accelerated pace, considering that come September 2021, when the season kicks off, it would be nearly 2 years since he's been on the field playing competitive football at that level, right, college or NFL, then that will put him in a really, really good position if he's able to do that. If not, then he might just need a little bit more time after opting out of that 2020 season.
Yeah, yeah, and you bring up those 27 pass deflections, which I believe led the nation in 2018 and 2019. And you know, when you read that, like, he refined his ball skills, at first it kind of seemed weird because he's, you know, a former wide receiver. But in talking with Mac, it's really, you know, that focusing on that first step, because it's really just having that extra step to be closer to the ball. And that's the difference maker between, you know, the pass deflection and an interception. It's not so much, you know, anything to do with his ability to catch, but it's having to, you know, take that extra step. And that's something that they really worked on. So I think it'll be interesting to kind of juxtapose, you know, a year of just purely working on technique, but not having that full, you know, conditioning that he would have had if he had played in a full season. But, like, you know, we kept bringing up technique and, you know, Saints fans and technique. And if you can have someone opposite Marshawn Lattimore, who is like an interception threat, that really makes it difficult of, you know, which side do you pick? Do you pick, you know, who might be the more prepared lockdown corner, or do you pick the guy that if you're within, you know, 5 feet of him, he might pull a Tracy Porter and just come in and sweep you up. So I think there's, you know, a lot of promise there. But and what schemes did you kind of see that he really, you know, shined in the most?
Yeah, that's a great question, because for the Saints, you have to be scheme versatile, right? Because they play a lot of zone, a lot of different zone coverages, whether it be quarters, cover three, all these different schemes that they play. They play a lot of cover, let me not say a lot of cover two, but more cover two than their usual over the course of the 2020 season. But they also lean a lot in man, and you look at, you know, Janoris Jenkins, who, of course, they're trying to replace opposite Marshawn Lattimore, played around 43% of his snaps in man coverage and played very well in that system and in that scheme. And so you have to look for scheme versatility as opposed to one more than the other. And that's certainly what you saw from Paulson Adebo. In the opportunities where he got to play man, he performed extremely well there and actually performed, I would say, better in man than he did in zone throughout his, you know, if you look over his collegiate tape. But he played a lot more zone than he played man. So there's an experience factor there that maybe has to be, or let me say, more of an experience sort of leap that has to be made in terms of being able to transition in man coverage. That tends to be kind of where he does well, but transitioning in zone coverage is something that, even though he did more, he might still need a little bit of work on. You know, the couple of advantages that every wide receiver has over the defensive back that they're lined up across is that, A, they know what's coming, and, B, it all happens ahead of them. Whereas if you're a defensive back, you're having to transition from back pedal to playing in whatever technique you're playing. If you're playing over the top, or if you're playing a trail technique and you're playing underneath the receiver, all of those pieces, bits and bobs, are things that he might need to work on continuing to develop, right? They're not things that he needs to, quote-unquote, get better at, but they're refining skills, and it's getting comfortable in that transition. That's going to be something pretty big for him, and especially at his size. And this happens when your preference is bigger receivers. You tend to get folks that are a little bit, you know, that have a little bit of trouble with fluidity and transition, particularly at the hips, because they play high. And if their pad level is high, it's harder to transition. If your pad level is low, you can shift your center of gravity a little bit more. So those are all just fundamental things, like you mentioned before, that will be able to be adjusted a bit, working especially with a defensive backs coach like Chris Richard, who the Saints replaced Aaron Glenn with, who's an absolute legend across the NFL, you know, at his coaching position, particularly coaching up the Legion of Boom. Over in Seattle and the heyday there. But you saw a lot of scheme versatility, and then because of that, you can see and identify all the things that are refinable in any scheme.
Yeah, and you brought up a great point. And I also just wanted to say, too, that, and Adebo's mentioned this, that Stanford is very scheme versatile. A lot of schools aren't. But the bringing up the Saints coaching staff and you know, how paramount that kind of is to the success of this organization, and why, you know, a lot of Saints people are seemingly mystified by some of the confidence that some of us have instilled in the team and in these rookies and their development. But how much emphasis to that for you is on that coaching staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's the one of the big things that they worked to maintain as a constant as much as they could over the course of the offseason. I mean, we finally saw the Saints coaching staff end up sort of getting pilfered in the Sean Payton coaching tree, finally starting to take shape, which is something I think many of us have waited to happen for so long. Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn heading over to Detroit, Joe Lombardi heading over to the Chargers in Los Angeles. They almost lost Ryan Nielsen, the defensive line coach, who's done such a phenomenal job at developing the pieces on the defensive line that this team has and the players that are there. And then they ended up retaining him from LSU, who was trying to bring him over as defensive coordinator. So there were a lot of things that had to shift. You know, I mean, you had Ronald Curry move over to quarterback, who's a rising star when it comes to coaching circles in the NFL. Zach Schrieff coming back to rejoin the team as the assistant offensive line coach, a change there as well. And then you saw that change with the defensive backs coach. So you saw what could have been a detrimental sort of pillage of the Saints offense, of the Saints coaching staff, and you saw them turn that around by filling those holes or replacing, or let me say retaining slash promoting, in Ryan Nielsen's case, the coaching staffs and making the right decisions at the right places so that they can maintain the competition level and maintain the success that they're hoping to maintain moving forward.
Yeah, it's a great point about them, you know, kind of promoting people in the same way with Fontenot and Jeff Ireland and that kind of, you know, assistant GM role. And talking before about mismanagement of quarterbacks and teams, and really the Saints to me are just one of the blueprints for both team and organizational function. But I also agree that it's interesting that we're finally going to see the Saints coaching tree kind of finally start to happen, because to me, the only person that really parallels Peyton, you know, in a mental sense for me a lot of the time is Bill Belichick, but his coaching tree does not go well.
Right.
And why do you, you know, why do you think that is? Is it just that Belichick kind of compensates for these things, or, you know, why does that not work? And do you think that this Sean Payton coaching tree has more of a success rate looking forward?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, right? I mean, you would imagine that you would see this coaching tree that comes from one of the greatest coaches of all time, and Bill Belichick, if not the greatest coach of all time, considering, you know, depending upon who you're talking to, not really take shape. And the fact of the matter is that you can hire from the tree, but you're never going to hire the seed, right? You're never going to hire the actual, you know, you can hire the branches or whatever, but you're never actually going to get the thing. And so when it comes to Bill Belichick, who sort of has at least the perception outwardly, obviously I've not been involved within the organization, but the perception outwardly is very much that Bill controls all and works kind of directly with Robert Kraft there as their owner. But when you look at the New Orleans Saints, it seems to be a little bit more of a symbiotic relationship across the coaching staff. And Sean Payton is the figure, no, more than just the figurehead. Sean Payton calls the shots, makes the final decisions, things like that. But it feels that there's a little bit more of an organic approach to the way that the New Orleans Saints work together and sort of work as one, as a group, right? As opposed to just sort of one person having the sort of, okay, here's the binder, here's what this role does. Sean Payton seems to really, what's the word that I'm looking for? Let's just say support the ideas of those around him, and that could translate better for those folks.
Exactly like you said, the symbiotic relationship. I love how you phrase that. I feel the same way. That's, again, guys, Ross Jackson, at Ross Jackson NOLA on Twitter. Please go follow him, y'all. And like I said, it's Paulson Adebo Party at Ross Jackson's house. Thank you so much for coming on.
A pleasure. Keep it up.
All right. See ya. All right, guys. We'll be back after this break on ESPN New Orleans.
Join us for our Memorial Day sales event going on now until June 1st at Southland Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Fiat in Houma. Get a great deal on a Ram truck today. See all their new commercial trucks and vans. Southland has the perfect vehicle for your business with Ram's long-lasting new pickups or their efficient new Ram work vans. Choosing the right one should be easy. Get more for your business with a new Ram truck or van at Southland Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Fiat, 6161 West Park Avenue in Houma. Here for you yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Time is money. Don't waste both running around looking for filters, batteries, and belts and related items. Fleet Supply Warehouse delivers. Fleet Supply offers daily scheduled delivery, including Bayou Lafourche, New Orleans, Morgan City, New Iberia, Lafayette, Thibodaux, Baton Rouge, the North Shore, plus the River Parishes too. Automotive, lawn equipment, agricultural, marine, or industrial. Fleet Supply Warehouse, 985-868-0430. Venture Boulevard, Houma.
Hey New Orleans, this is Nate Osborne, head coach of the NOLA Gold, your Major League Rugby team.
Hey New Orleans, it's Carl Mayer of your NOLA Gold rugby team. The 2021 Major League Rugby season is here.
In the Shrine on Airline, now called the Gold Mine.
The Gold Mine is COVID conscious, so you can spread out around the stadium to enjoy the hard-hitting, non-stop action of Major League Rugby, filled with world-class players.
And mate, the best part is that our season tickets are about the same price as one game in other pro sports. Check us out at nolagoldrugby.com or just call 50 Rugby.
Offshore workers are among the most important members of the Gulf Coast workforce. When a person working offshore or on a vessel is injured, the effects on their family can be devastating. At the King Firm, we are proud to have experience with these types of cases and make it a priority to see that our clients receive just compensation and are treated fairly. If you've been injured, don't play the game of claims with the insurance companies. Ring the King at 504-909-KING or 888-241-8766.
It's Mike DeTilia for Neil Small Engine Incorporated. Listen up. That's what we did at Gravely. We listened to lawn professionals. Then we brought the professional performance home. Gravely residential zero-turn mowers show the neighborhood that you mean business. Zero turns that are as tough as nails, operator comfort beyond compare. We've had 100 years of professional advice to perfect cutting performance. Just drop the deck, put the neighbors on notice. Gravely, driven from within. At Neil Small Engine Incorporated, locations in Houma, LaRose, and Thibodeau.
Energize your business with Bayou Black Electric Supply in Houma. When you're elbow deep in a job, the last thing you need is to lose time and money fetching electrical supplies. Bayou Black Electric will deliver your items to the job site. There's daily scheduled service throughout South Louisiana, Lafourche, Terrebonne, Morgan City, New Iberia, and Lafayette, plus the river parishes too. If you need parts, call Bayou Black Electric Supply. 985-223-8807, Highway 311 in Houma.
Medications can be scary sometimes, but necessary for our health and well-being. Lady of the Sea Community Pharmacy's staff are trained in finding you the lowest cost available on your medications. Stop by with your prescriptions or medicine bottles and let one of us review your options. Patients who take their medications as prescribed have better health outcomes. Stop by one of our pharmacies today, located in Rouse's Supermarket on Highway 3235 in La Rose, or at Lady of the Sea Medical Clinic in Cutoff. We treat you like family at Lady of the Sea.
Can we talk sports? Real sports.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
What's up, guys? We are back on the Sports Hangover. It's the Hudak Takeover with Maddie Hudak underscore 94. I am now being joined, though, with a little help from my good friend Kat Terrell. Kat, what's up?
You are hosting the show and not Gus. I can't even tell you that. I'm going to tell him that too. I'm going to tell him that you should take his job over.
Everyone tweet Gus. Just ruin his day in Miami.
At GCAT. What is it? GCAT?
I don't know. He screws mine up every single time. So if I screw it up, I don't really feel that bad. Something about GCAT, but you can find him and go, talk to him. But we do have a caller on. Let's go and talk to Jack and make sure I do this correctly. Jack, we have you on.
Yeah. Good afternoon, ladies. How y'all doing?
We're good.
We're great. How are you?
All right. Look, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, Maddie, you were talking about player movement in the different sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I view sports as entertainment. I'm not, it didn't hurt my feelings when Chris Paul left because it was time to go. Because this wasn't a good organization. It was time for him to leave. It didn't really hurt my feelings when Anthony Davis left because, once again, it was a bad organization. It's just the way he did it. He's just kind of a soft guy, you know. And he ruined three teams, seasons the way he did it. But I don't really understand why people expect guys to stay at franchises forever. Like, there's bad franchises in every sport. You know, you can name who they are. And you know who the good ones are. Like, for instance, in the NFL, they have two in the same division. Baltimore and Pittsburgh are good in organizations as ever.
Do we lose you?
They're going to get to a place where they can win. But that's not the case with a lot of these teams. You know, there's another team in that division, Cincinnati, that never seems to have a plan. So they're not good in 5 or 6 years. Should Joe Burrow stay there forever?
I'm with you. Like I said, there's cases like Kevin Durant where he got a lot of blowback. But, yeah, I mean, if you're a player and you're a competitor at heart, really see how you just kind of let your legacy waste away. So I'm with you. I don't know what the deal is. Like, Kat, what's your view on this kind of, player autonomy movement, if you will?
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that players should be loyal to franchises, but I also understand why fans feel like they should. I mean, it's an emotional part of sports. You spend fans view it as an investment in a player, okay? So you love a player, you buy their jersey, you watch them, you're emotionally invested, and then all of a sudden it's clear that he doesn't love your team as much as you do, and you're angry and hurt by that. And I think that you can't really, a lot of fans can't turn that emotional part off. Now, I mean, there's some, just like you were saying, some fans don't care. They love the team for what it is. I mean, college is basically defined by the institution, not the players. And I say that to say fans will be fans of, like, say LSU, no matter who's playing. But I think ultimately players have to do what they have to do for themselves because their careers are so short.
Yeah. Jack, any
Well, no, all I wanted to say was there'll be 25 or 30 guys that was on the Saints team last year that won't be on it this year. And because the organization makes the choice, fans don't care about that. That's fine. Those guys can go work at Popeyes for all they care. But if they make the decision on their own, then suddenly they're hurt. It's kind of like a boyfriend-girlfriend thing, I guess. You know?
Yeah, but, nope.
That's so true. But sports has never made sense, right? Like, the whole emotional part of it. I always joke that sports aren't even fun to watch. Like, when you're watching a close game, that's actually not fun at all. It's fun after, but half the time
we
just complain about our teams and don't like watching close games because it stresses us out. So sports, the emotion of sports makes no sense sometimes.
For real.
Matty, I didn't hear the first hour, but you were a college soccer player, right?
I was not college. I ran into a pothole in high school, and that effectively ended the soccer dreams that weren't really that bright. But yeah, there's a soccer background.
Okay, well, whatever you know, it's more than I do. And I watched the game last night, and I assume you did too.
Yeah, go Jesters! Like I said, shout out Mason Morais. I get to butcher everyone's name for the near future, but they did rack in the win. You're talking about the Jesters, right?
No, I was talking about the U.S. national team.
The U.S. national team? I was watching the NBA playoffs last night, so I did not
catch
that.
They were in a I'm sorry. Well, I thought you were talking about that before. They were in a CONCACAF semifinal last night, and I thought you watched that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. But if you want to give kind of – was it the men's team?
Yeah, I don't know enough to make comments. I was going to ask you.
I got you. Yeah, I'm going to be totally honest. I don't really follow U.S. men's national soccer as much as women's soccer, just because the competitive aspect isn't as great. But looks like they did beat Honduras. I just, I'm not totally sure what their prowess is. So I will look into that, Jack, and I will bring you some takes back on Tuesday.
Okay.
All right.
Ladies, y'all have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jack. All right, yeah. I mean, I was talking about this in the earlier segment when just kind of talking about these players wanting to take control of their legacy and expecting them to remove the emotion from things. And when, Rodgers said, it's about people, then the immediate backlash was no, it's a business. But like you're saying, from them to the fans, emotion is intertwined with sports. And
absolutely. I mean, and you can't turn that off. But I think fans, just from what I've observed, don't like how in the NBA players have that much power and how they basically can form super teams and choose who they want to go to. I think a lot of fans think, well, your legacy should be defined by making do with what you've got. And they point to Michael Jordan. The Jordan-LeBron debate comes down to that all the time. Mm-hmm. And team Michael Jordan forever, but that's just because I'm in my 30s. But I maybe they don't want to see the NFL become that. And it won't, because there's so few players that have that kind of power in the NFL compared to the size of the rosters. But I actually find it fascinating. I find it intriguing if players are willing to stick to their stance so much that they'll drag this into the season. So, I mean, I'm going to be watching Aaron Rodgers all summer see what he does.
Didn't think I would be saying that, but...
No kidding, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, where it really is kind of like this intriguing permeation of this, like, NBA model into the NFL, where all of a sudden, like you said, and it's I think there's something to be said about the players that can afford to do that, doing it. Because if they do it, then maybe others can, but if they don't try to make that happen, then it's never going to happen for lesser than players, but...
Right, and it's happening more than we've probably ever seen in the history of the NFL. I mean, Deshaun Watson is a good example, although clearly that changed a lot with everything that came out. But I wonder, if that hadn't happened, would he have had the power to basically force a trade? I don't know. It's an interesting alternate timeline. But, I mean, 10 years ago, I don't really think you saw many players do this, except the players that were willing to not go to the team that drafted it.
I was just going to say, before it was like Eli Manning saying, I'm going to, or like Jim Kelly going to play in a different league rather than go play for the...
And that's so rare.
Yeah.
You don't have other options.
Right.
You're stuck.
Right. And in between like the salary cap and it's just like you can't make these blockbuster trades and you don't really see them mid-season like you do in the NBA where like a star can say, I want to go win a playoff game, and they just go head off to a playoff-ready team. So, guys, again, Kat Terrell is coming here to bring in this final hour with me. When we come back, we'll have on Marlon Favorite and finish off with Ali Reddick. This is the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Anyone who has ever needed self-storage knows what a hassle it can be. You have to rent or borrow a truck and then find someone to help you move your stuff. And let's face it, moving furniture and heavy items without damaging them isn't easy. Renting the unit is worse. The hidden fees and admin costs.